This is Talk Star Wars,
the official podcast at talkstarwars.co.uk.
Hello everyone and welcome back to Talk Star Wars, and welcome to 2016, the year of Rogue One, A Star Wars Story. This is episode 10 of the Talk Star Wars podcast. I'm Mark.
I'm Stephen. Happy New Year.
And I'm Jeremy. Happy New Year to everyone.
And how many times have you seen The Force Awakens now, Jeremy?
I have now seen it four times. Once in 3D and all the rest in 2D.
Putting us to shame. Okay, before we kick off the show proper, we need to just acknowledge a very tragic passing. On Christmas Day, we said goodbye to Jason Wingreen. Many people probably won't realise that Jason Wingreen was the gentleman who provided the voice for Boba Fett in The Empire Strikes Back. It's a bit sad story, this. Are you guys familiar with what had happened to Jason Wingreen on The Empire Strikes Back?
I think they got rid of his voice.
Well, not only did they get rid of his voice, but he went uncredited.
He didn't get credited, didn't he? Yeah.
20 years he was uncredited. Yeah. So unfortunately, he didn't get any residuals. He didn't get any of the... I mean, fans kind of knew who he was, I think, and he did some of the conventions and things. Mm. He wasn't actually credited until, I think it was 2000. And then in 2002, they replaced
they
his voice
got
with
rid of him, yeah.
Tim Morrison, which is a pretty low thing to do, I think. But he had a life outside of Star Wars. He had four lines in Empire Strikes Back, took him 10 minutes to record. He had a life outside. He did 117 episodes of a show called All in the Family, where he played a recurring character as a bartender or something. But I still think it's really tragic. I loved Boba Fett's voice in Empire Strikes Back. I thought it was vastly superior to what they did in the special editions.
Definitely.
He had a cold sort of cowboy sound to him. Mm. What I would like to do is, I did send a tweet out to this effect. I think it's probably a good idea that now we're seeing a Boba Fett movie sort of start to form for one of these Star Wars stories. I thought it might be a good idea if Lucasfilm just throw a character in there, a bounty hunter, and call it Wingreen.
Mm. It's a bit of a tribute. Yeah.
So I've started a hashtag Win with two N's, Green. If you agree that we should at least pay this gentleman some tribute in future films, keep him alive in the Star Wars universe, use the hashtag, show a bit of support for him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay, cool. Let's move on to some more joyous things, shall we? What have you guys been doing over Christmas? I know Jeremy spent most of it in the cinema watching Star Wars.
Oh, yeah, I've just been watching Star Wars and talking about Star Wars with various people until their ears bleed.
I've been trying to win myself over with it, but I still haven't achieved it.
You need to watch it again.
I know. Mark's going to take me to IMAX.
Yes.
Oh, I'll come.
Yeah, of course, yeah. I'm going to take you both up to see it. We'll go and see it at IMAX, and we can get Steve's thoughts on the same page as us, eh?
Yeah, I know I'm going to like it more. That's the beauty of going, because I won't be expecting a tenth as much as I was when I last went.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of pressure on that first viewing
is.
For fans, isn't there?
I beeped myself in the beep when I went on my own.
Yeah, let's try and drop the explicit tag from this podcast, shall we? The last podcast performed really well because we didn't swear on it.
Yeah, no.
Or at least I bleeped out Stephen swearing.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, Steve sweared a lot though, didn't he? So.
It's because I am of little intelligence in it.
Okay. We have had some... we've had some communication from some people that listen to the podcast, which is nice.
Mm-hmm.
I got a lovely email yesterday from Rob.
Yeah, that was lovely, wasn't it?
Yeah, I'm going to go through. I'm going to sort of edit a couple of bits as we go. Mainly all the bits where he says how wonderful we are, because obviously we don't need to hear all of those bits. But
no, put them in. Keep them in.
He does throw a half-decent question our way.
It's
so
very lucid email, this, and very clever, and must say he's taken a lot of time to do it and really appreciate that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Although his order of liking Star Wars is... We need to talk about that.
Well, we can jump up and down on him for that. Let's just get let's just read his email. So it says, hi, my name is Rob. I'm a huge Star Wars fan, and my ranking of the movies... Right, everyone got... If you're listening to this and you've got a pen, make a note of this because you'll want to refer to this later. My ranking of the movies in order: 5, 3, 6, 4, 7, 1, and 2. The middle three ordering varies depending on my mood. I think we can all agree with that. It's probably
wrong.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, yeah, 5, 6, and 4.
I think three's a little. I think three's a little high.
Yeah, I would say 5, 6, 4, 3, 7. Well, I would say no. His first four need reordering, but as for 7 and 1 and 2, I don't know. I'm still in the.
I think you could probably rate them from 7 through to 1 in that order, and I'd be quite happy with that.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm ready to put 7 quite that high yet.
You've not seen it 4 times, though, have you?
No, that's true. It's above Jedi for me at the moment, but we'll see. We'll see how it goes as well.
Oh no!
Spend some more time with it. No, it is definitely. We'll get to why, Steve. We'll get to why.
You need to really get to why because
he continues on in his email. My friend kindly put me onto the show, and I've so far binged about 3 or 4 episodes today. Bloody hell, he's patient. Most interesting was your Force Awakens reaction show, which Steve even forgot we recorded, which I thought was great. Listening made me wish I'd been in on the chat. So I thought this was the next best thing. Also, I think it was good that despite your differences of opinion, you all kept your cool and didn't shout at each other. Well, we do that when we're not recording, so I just edit all the shouting out. He's put, if only the whole internet was like that, yeah.
We don't shout at each other, we all love
No, we shout at Steve beforehand and then we calm him down.
I get all the hate, but it's pretty much, you do it on and offline, so I understand that. Hopefully right. One day I won't get any more hate because I'll be in the same boat.
You're going to like this bit then, Steve, because he really enjoyed The Force Awakens. He's put, for my money, I like Force Awakens, and at the time of writing I've seen it 4 times. Did he go with you, Jeremy?
No, yeah. But it's almost a certainty he was there at the same time as me.
Yeah,
he watched the 5 past.
He saw the 5 past midnight. He's seen it in IMAX.
We were probably there enjoying it together.
It's by no means
going to kick Avatar off the top spot if you keep on.
It's already taken it domestically, isn't it?
Avatar is nothing in comparison.
Oh God.
We can talk about this later, but yeah. Avatar was fantastic in 3D, but if you watch it on the telly, it's just a movie.
It's awesome
with blue cat people. Anyway,
I watched The Abyss last night. Also, awesome.
Oh, here we go.
I watched Here's The Abyss the other day. I love The Abyss. The effects are pants of the crane falling down.
It's 1989.
Yeah.
This is a.
We'll do a special Steve Loves James Cameron one day.
You can't say The Abyss special effects are not good. It's 1989.
They were good for the time.
Most of them are better than Snoke.
Right. We'll circle back to that. Okay, this is what Rob's email continuing. It's by no means the perfect movie, but I think it's a great start to get people excited about a new Star Wars after the divisive prequels. Now, I couldn't agree more with him there.
I agree with him there.
Yeah.
And I'm working on something at the moment for the site. It's a piece about precisely what they did with The Force Awakens, which, Steve, I think will address a few of the problems that you had with it. Certainly a few of the problems that a friend of the show, Paul, had with it. But we'll come back to that. Maybe not today, but we'll come back to that when I've posted the piece. All right. Rob carries on. I definitely recommend the novelisation of the film, which touches and expands on a few very interesting points that might make for good talking points on the show. We're going to talk about something like that. Audible have a great unabridged version narrated by Mark Thompson, who nails the voice of old Han like nobody's business, especially when he screams out in pain and dies. my question to you is this. We really need to address this. How did you interpret Han talking about the fallen Jedi apprentice who sent Luke into exile? I find it interesting that everyone assumes that it was Ben, as in Solo, when it could easily have been Snoke. If Snoke has managed to stay hidden for so long, which is touched on in the novelisation, it's possible he could have concealed his nature and his intentions from Luke whilst he got close to Ben. The fall could be as small as 2 from 2 apprentices.
Isn't Snoke, I mean, visually he looks ancient, doesn't he? Which would be my first. And also, like, would he have been an apprentice that recently?
Well, that was my first thought as well. It could have been Snoke, because nothing says that an apprentice has to be young. I mean,
Well, that, was... pardon, they thought Anakin, and I'll have to go back to the prequels, and I apologise for all of that, but they thought Anakin was too old in that.
Yes.
Well, yeah. I mean, look at Rey. 1 minute she's a nerf herder.
No, no. I'm going to address the Rey thing later on. I have.
You should do.
I made notes.
She might be an awesome Jedi in 5 minutes, but she's not on the new Monopoly board. Boom.
She is now.
Good point.
Oh, did they put her in?
Yeah.
Reactions. All right, he's got a final piece to his email. Not only that, but everyone assumes that Kylo Ren killed apprentices when the fall happened, like Anakin did in Revenge of the Sith, which, Steve, you were celebrating earlier. When Han's line says he destroyed it all. To me, that doesn't immediately suggest that anyone was killed, only that Luke's plans were scuppered. I'd be interested to hear your thoughts and hope to hear the answer on a future episode. It's coming on Monday. Keep up the great work. Cheers, Rob. And he's left his Twitter address is at Rob Wade, W-A-D-E, Vision. Okay, so let's have a look at these questions then. So,
we go to the most recent bit first about whether they're all dead or...
Yeah, okay, let's do the second part first.
I would agree with that. I think they're dispersed because it's going to make for far more interesting viewing in the future if there are more apprentices out there.
What about the Force Vision, which is in standing in the rain surrounded by slaughtered people? There are bodies
everywhere. You've seen it a lot. Are there people on the floor?
Yeah, loads of them.
There's a lot of bodies. I think that I'm with you, Jeremy, and I like where Rob's coming from, that it could have been that the school disbanded, and that's what the fall was, that the school fell apart, and it wasn't the death of everybody there. But I think that it was, in fact, the death of everybody there. We saw a lot of blood on the ground there, didn't we?
With the exception of one person that me and Mark appear to have agreed on.
Absolutely.
Why has... the Empire, or I won't say what are they called now, the
First Order.
First Order invested so heavily in those anti lightsaber weapons. Then, if there's only one,
you mean nines?
Yeah, Z9s are they, or Z6s?
Yeah, nines is his name, isn't it?
Yeah, his name is Nines. Yeah, and he's
yes,
it's a cult riot
character
weapon,
already, isn't he?
Wasn't there threes, nine, or sixes, nines, and then zeros, which is called trip, wasn't it, or something, or slip?
Slip, yeah.
Slip, because they were Finn's mates, weren't they?
That's right, yeah.
That's why shouts that traitor. He knows him, doesn't he?
Yeah. Yeah.
See, this is all great backstory that should have been in the bloody film.
It'll be in the novelisation, I imagine.
Yeah, and it might be in. They might come back to it in later films, won't they? It might be elements of
novelisation to the movie. To sit there and read it.
Yeah, I don't think. I don't think those weapons are necessarily just anti-lightsaber weapons. They've got a use. They've got a practical use for these riot...
He's a riot control stormtrooper, isn't he?
Yes.
I suppose they give you a... Right, here's a question then. This is a technical question. You know, like getting into the exhaust ports of lightsabers and stuff. But if they're not specifically for lightsabers, how the hell can they stop or defend themselves against a saber, which would normally chop anything in half? It must be an energy beam.
Well, if they know the lightsabers are a technology that's out there, then why not build in the contingency to repel it, even though they're not a common weapon, you know?
Which brings me back to the first point, that there must be people, they must think there are other people who use lightsabers. Mm. I think they probably killed half of, or a few of the people. Because how many in episode 2... How many Jedi were being trained there? I mean, you had the kids, the younglings, there was loads of those. I mean, there were hundreds of Jedi, so what's not to say in the last 30 years they hunted down anyone with a high midichlorian count and then started training them? It's taken.
Well, you think the First Order might have taken them and trained them?
No, I think Luke.
Luke, right.
Went out hunting, you know, loads of, as many people as you could get to build up the Jedi again.
Well, I think obviously you're going to get new generations of people who are force sensitive. I won't use the M word. So, you know, there's always going to be generations of it. So even if they were slaughtered, there'll be more out there, won't there?
Well, yeah. I mean, this is all where the episode one kind of kicks itself in the butt. Because is it hereditary? Is it random? Or is it the Force itself chooses people who have the Force.
No, Dave Filoni, who runs Star Wars Rebels, he's kind of George Lucas's second in command, and he's studied with George Lucas on the Force thing so they can get it right in the show. He said that most people can use the Force. They don't have to be Jedis or trained. He even suggested that Han Solo uses the Force to fly the Millennium Falcon.
I don't think he's the only one.
No, which we'll come to in a little bit in more detail. But if you've got people out there that can use the Force and they're using it in their day-to-day life, it's only the truly exceptional ones that are discovered and trained and focused and become like Force acolytes, if you like, and they become the Jedi.
So and maybe they let that's it in. What
Luke... Yeah, they let it in, to quote Maz. But Luke's clearly gone out and he's found a number of people to start, and maybe it's taken decades to get to that point, and obviously Ben was one of his students when he snapped.
That's interesting. So technically, the Force is like a Force that's everywhere, and everyone's perceptive to it, except some people are more...
perceptive than others.
Okay, like, that's
it. Because it's, Yoda says in Empire, doesn't it? It surrounds every living thing. Surrounds and penetrates.
Ben said it as well, didn't he?
Yeah.
So it surrounds and binds the galaxy together.
Yeah. So everyone has an M count.
But it must do.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
It's like a receptor site. Some people have got more receptor sites than others, so they can absorb more of it.
So I could have the Force.
No, because you hate Star Wars. You have no joy.
Exactly. I could force myself on you, Mark.
Oh, there you go. So let's look at the first part of his question then. So are we settled on the fact that he's probably... they are dead and not disbanded?
I would say almost all of them are dead.
Yeah, at the school
I'd go with almost all.
Yeah.
Yeah, all right then. So the first part, Snoke being the apprentice that... that broke the school then, not Ben.
No, too old.
Yeah, too, I think too old.
Too experienced, too old, too set in his ways. Too... I
definitely get the impression that this guy has been hiding, been in deep cover. This is why I love the idea that he might be Darth Plagueis, but I think it's pretty clear now that
wasn't there
not...
news about...
Or an Inquisitor, it could be one of those, couldn't
it? Yeah.
Wasn't no there one... about why he wasn't Darth Plagueis in the week? I remember reading something, but I can't recall now.
Andy Serkis said he's not, didn't he?
Yeah, a lot of people are saying he's not, but I'm not hearing good. I'm not hearing good reasons for it. I just think it's a great opportunity to bring someone from the prequel trilogies in the prequel trilogy into the sequel trilogy without upsetting.
Well,
too many people.
I did see one of the droids from the Techno Army, you know, the ones that twiddle their buttons to talk when they're talking to Dooku. One because I've you know.
Oh, were they in Maz's castle?
No, there was one behind Rey when she was taking all the scavenge stuff.
Oh, that's interesting.
Wow.
I've looked hard for
everything. Do you think that as part of the buyout, they also got all the sets and stuff from, or was it, what was it, ILM?
There were no sets in the prequels.
No,
it was all cartoons.
I mean, sorry, not sets, but what, did they get all of the costumes and, or was that completely CGI?
I think he was CGI, but obviously the new one wasn't. I don't think, you know, the guy in the queue wasn't.
Because I was talking about CGI, I read that they nearly made Maz a puppet, didn't they?
Yeah, I think there is some puppet work in there.
I think the hands are, some of the handwork puppeteer.
And there's definitely, there was a body double as well.
Yeah.
An actress of diminutive stature, but I don't know what her name is. I
think they made the right choice there because you end up with something like Yoda in episode one before they CGI'd him.
Which is terrible.
It works when you're just doing a passing shot and there's a big puppet sitting on a sofa because there's not animation there and you can kind of think, oh, that works. It looks real. But when something's talking, it just doesn't work. You need to CGI it. Otherwise, it looks like the Muppets.
And sounds like them.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I think we've settled on answers to Rob's question. I don't think it was Snoke. I definitely got the impression that that was Ben that fell and destroyed the school. And I personally believe that he slaughtered practically everybody that was at that school. That's my take on it.
And we've both come into agreement with that, which I take it we're going to later, are we?
Yeah, we've just got one more listener question to address, and then we'll jump into the Force Awakens talk, and we can get to that point.
So is that Rob's done now? Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Rob.
Yeah, thank you, Rob.
I hope that perhaps he'd write us again, and we can get a weekly thing of this. Not just Rob, not put too much pressure on Rob. Write once a week, please, Rob.
Yeah, give us loads of questions.
Before we started recording, I just put out on Twitter that we were starting the show and asked if anyone wanted anything addressed. And we got a tweet from @master_snow_, who asks, who would be cast to play Han Solo in the origin film? Well, I'm guessing he means the Han Solo, A Star Wars Story.
Yeah.
Please let it be Ingruber.
What do you think, Jeremy? I'm with Steve. I want Anthony Ingruber.
Yeah, he's the guy who's done all the voices on YouTube and things, isn't he?
Yeah.
Even looks like him.
He really looks like him, and he's got all the mannerisms down. I really like the idea of him stepping into the role.
The only problem is, even though it would be a fantastic choice, they tend to stay away from the obvious choice because it's obvious.
Yeah, I agree.
And it's such a shame, because it would be awesome.
Yeah, I imagine every
young actor on the planet is going to, put their name in the hat.
Yeah, well, I imagine whoever already read for it.
Whoever they choose will be spot on, I imagine.
Tell you why I like it. You know my problem with Han snuffing it. This would be like, oh, he hasn't gone. Because he looks so much like him and his mannerisms are the same and he's basically...
Why don't you just watch episode 4, 5, and 6 every day to cheer you up?
No, because I always think when I see Han now, I see him die.
Well, we're gonna touch on something. At the third point in the Force Awakens section on the show notes, you'll see an unusual name. I think that has a link to this Han Solo movie. So I think we're talking about a significant investment for long term. So getting this Han Solo casting right is crucial, because I don't think it'll just be one movie that we see. I think there'll be a number of movies that we'll see telling the stories of Han. And what the little snippet that we got in Force Awakens of Han and Chewie actually pirating, I thought was fantastic, and I really want to see that again. And to my mind, Anthony Gruber's the obvious choice for putting this in place, because he's an unknown, so he's not going to bring much baggage with him. He's spot on with the impersonations. If there's a director there that can pull a performance out of him and get the sort of performance that we got from Daisy Ridley and John Boyega in this movie, who are still relatively new to this industry, then we've all won. That would be fantastic.
I think people overlook people in films who are doing an impersonation, but they don't realise how many Oscars are won by people doing impersonations.
Yeah. Well, it was just a significant one last year.
Yes.
Which was an extraordinary performance as well.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a very, very valid point, that. That was probably my best film of last year, by the way.
I cried all the way through it.
Yeah,
I was
back of beat.
Fantastic film. All right, well, there you go. Thanks for the question, Master_Snow_. Anthony Ingruber is the answer to that question. I think he would be
superb. Unanimously.
Okay, Force Awakens talk. Let's start with what is done at the box office.
Everything.
So it's already number one domestic gross of all time. It's beaten Avatar.
Yay!
Worldwide, it's in fourth place, but it's less than 100 million behind Jurassic World, and it's just opened in China today as we record. So,
oh really?
Yeah, we should start seeing some bigger numbers, but probably not for very long.
Why has it taken them so long to release it in China?
I'm not sure that. I mean, the old model of releasing films, of staggered releases and things like that, was because you would dealing with print stock that would be recycled for the most part.
Well, they've also got the whole communism thing where they have to check every single thing to make sure there's no hidden...
I would have thought that the thing that would be a bit of an impact that they should have worried about in China would be pirates in
Do you think that was a consideration?
Well, it would be something for me. I would be worried about, you know, you've got a billion Chinese people. Someone out there is bound to have some kind of illegal download of it somewhere or other.
Well, they are. There are copies out there already. Cam copies.
If you look at YouTube, I was Googling Force Awakens to, you know, to get some ideas for the show. And, like, the first 15 hits are the full film. Click on this link.
Jesus. Yeah. Which is dreadful. Stop it.
It's not the way to see it.
No.
I mean, if anyone likes film and you want to continue watching films, then don't download films.
Yeah.
No.
Because you ain't going to be watching them for long.
Especially don't watch a film like The Force Awakens. I mean, you know, my first viewing wasn't with a very large audience. Mm. And my second viewing, I took Lisa on her birthday because she's a very lucky lady. And we saw it with a full auditorium packed to the seat. And it was a fantastic experience. It was miles different from the first time I saw it because
absolutely, yeah.
Everybody was cheering. Everybody was laughing.
Yeah, I mean, you know my feelings on the cinema, Mark. I mean, I personally like a more personal experience. I know, and that's only because whenever I go to the movies, I tend to bring bad luck with me. I know someone always kicks up or some kid's always throwing something or... It's probably redemption, Jeremy, for us when we were kids.
Yeah, we were those children.
We were those children. But see, I would gladly, if they ever change the way, and they might do in the future, that movies are made, where it's almost like a crowdfund, I would be the first person to spend 20 quid on Avatar 2, 20 quid on The Force Awakens, 20 quid on this, that and the other, and, you know, sort of get the film through production and then get sent a copy when it's done or something. I'd quite like that idea.
Yeah, I don't think you're far off from that. You can get that with some smaller properties now.
Really?
Day and date, cross-platform releases.
Hmm.
But yeah. These big things, just look at these numbers. You're not going to see that. Not yet.
And you don't need to yet with blockbusters like this, do you?
No. At the time of recording, worldwide, The Force Awakens has done 1,585,000,000. 700, I mean, we go on and on and on, but there you go. It's not 1.6 billion.
So it's just over halfway to Avatar, but you've got all the DVD and Blu-ray releases.
Well, that won't count to this number. This is purely box office.
Yeah, it's box office, isn't it?
And what's Avatar in that? 2.7?
It's, hang on, I can tell you exactly.
2.5, isn't it?
Talk amongst yourselves.
And that's purely box office, is it?
It's purely box office, this, yeah.
But so, is that not because... Avatar was 3D, so more people watched it in 3D, and 3D is more expensive.
Well, there's a bit of that. It's 2.788, Steve, to answer your question. I think there's a bit of that, but I'm pretty sure Avatar got a second release.
Yeah, you can watch it. You could watch it in 2D, and then there was the extended
version. You could watch it in 2D, but then you'd
go, I wouldn't be surprised, you know, if we got to... a couple of months before Episode 8's release and The Force Awakens goes back into theatres.
As an extended one, do you think?
I don't know if they'd do that. I think that they could do that because
like
there seems to be 20 deleted scenes that I know of.
Mm. Yeah, but look at extended versions and how they're it's normally synonymous with the director. Look at James Cameron. Every film he's done, bar Titanic, has had an extended version. And I think he enjoys that. Because it brings excitement, and I don't think he does it as a money thing. Because, like, it's just you have to bring films under a certain length, don't you? And it's pressure from the cinemas. But I don't think JJ's ever done that.
No, and he doesn't like it. He doesn't like director's cuts.
No,
this was, I think, his preferred.
Yeah. It's the director's cut, isn't it? When he put them out.
Yeah. And the other thing as well is, I think Lucasfilm and Disney will want to stay away from a special edition style reception to anything they do.
Yeah.
If you put out an extended one of this, even if you just put another scene in it, someone's going to slap a special edition label on it and it'll tarnish.
And no one will watch it.
If you said to James Cameron, like, oh, well, that's the director's cut, he would argue and say, no, that isn't. It's an extended version. It's all the scenes that I really like but made the pace slow down. And they're not really director's cut. Not like, you know, like Blade Runner. I mean, how many different versions of that are there out there? That they're
one
kind of fair
enough.
Cuts, and they kind of get silly after a while. Like The Abyss now, when I don't watch the extended one, which is it 28 minutes? I think it's quite long. It's 28 minutes longer. I find it nothing like as good a film.
It's the same as Aliens, though, isn't it? There's only point in watching the special edition.
Yeah, and Terminator 2. I mean, why would you watch the normal version? It's all those little incidental bits, like his chip in his head being swapped round, that make it so good.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, I know we've spoke about it before. And Jeremy, you might, because, you know, you might remember this, like Mark and I and Andy will all remember the night that Terminator 2 came on Channel 4.
Yeah.
And we were like, what?
We did double takes, didn't we?
We were, you know, we were all watching. I don't think we probably knew each other, but we weren't sort of close like we are now. But because that was the only channel available, that's what you did. You watched those four channels. And we were all like having, oh my God, why didn't they actually put this in the TV Times?
Yeah.
But we digress.
We do. Right, okay, so that's the box office. Steve, you did mention the DVD and Blu-ray sales, even though they won't affect this bottom line of this number, this big number we're looking at, they are going to do their own huge numbers, I think. And if reports are correct, we're looking at April the 6th for a global release on Blu-ray. I gave up buying Blu-ray nearly 2 years ago in favour of buying HD movies out of iTunes for convenience more than anything else, but I think I might buy this Blu-ray.
Well, yeah, I mean, will it be available on iTunes at the same time?
It is. You can pre-order it on iTunes now. Incidentally, you can order everything off the website, talkstyles.co.uk, Blu-ray, and you can pre-order from iTunes on there, but I don't know which way to go with this. I'm pretty sure the Blu-ray will come with an ultraviolet copy, which I hate. I'd rather have it in iTunes.
Yeah, because the ultraviolet copy is normally on HD, is it?
Yeah, it's nowhere near convenient to use either.
No. So what?
You're officially all talking Wookiee to me because I've no idea what you're talking about at this point.
Yeah, it's not. It's really not that important.
Jeremy wants it on VHS or Betamax.
Will you get the Blu-ray, Jeremy, or are you still a DVD man?
I do have a Blu-ray player, but I because all the other ones I've got, I've got them all in a box set of Blu-ray, so I'd probably buy the Blu-ray.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just because otherwise it'd be the wrong size and my OCD would kick in.
Are we going to get into which box set he bought? Because this could go down well, really bad.
Oh, well, let's not go into that. Let's stay on point, shall we?
Stay on target.
The iTunes version, Mark?
What, sorry?
How much is the iTunes version?
iTunes, I believe, is... hang on, let me have a look. I think it's $15.99, same as the
too
Blu-ray.
Too much for a digital copy. I'll buy it on Blu-ray.
Yeah, well, that was... that's the decision I've kind of made, is to get the Blu-ray and to buy the digital copy in iTunes, just for convenience. The Blu-ray is $15.99, so I think maybe the iTunes version is a couple of quid cheaper. I'll probably end up buying
it. It's nice to hold it, though, isn't it? It's like having a Kindle and a book. I don't have a Kindle. I think they're an abomination. I like a book. And say, if I want to watch a movie, I like to be able to hold it in my hand and, you know, the when you open it for the first time and peel the plastic off, it's like, oh, it's great.
More visceral, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I don't know what I'm going to do. If I don't like it the second time, I won't be buying Jack.
If you don't like it the second time, then you hate joy.
You will like it the second time.
I am with you. I am so disappointed in myself more than the film. Like,
well, I think every time I've watched it, because we do this and, we go online and we all do the same thing. We look for different things. And every time you watch it, you've discovered something new and you're like, oh, wow, look at that. And look, you know, when I watched it in 3D, I'm gonna do one of my notes here. I noticed that when the Raftar thing grabs Finn, the tentacle that grabs him makes the Indiana Jones whip noise.
Oh, really?
Yes. And I'm like, oh, wait, what? All that proper noise. I'm like, oh, wow.
There's been a couple of people that have mentioned that those Raftars rolling down the corridor after Han Solo looks like the boulder chasing Indy.
Yep.
So there's a nice little homage in there to him.
It's a proper little thing. But equally, I'm going to go, while we're talking about Raftars, and it's on... If you look, when Finn is grabbed, a Raftar goes for Rey, and miraculously, she manages to avoid it. I think she may well have been using the Force without realising.
I agree with you. Let's do your list of notes, Jeremy.
Right, okay.
Because I think you've got some very fascinating points to bring up.
again, repeat viewing, and I'll probably find more every time I watch it. But I have to do it from memory because I left the notes behind because I was in a hurry. But the very, very first time you see Ray, when she's looking through the crashed Star Destroyer, the very first thing she does is leap through the air and catches a rope. Now, even that, the dexterity involved with that isn't normal. So you could look at that and go, oh, that's possible. And then she slides down the rope and all that. The next thing, she's fighting the guy. No, actually, not the next thing. She hears BB-8 first through the force, without shadow of a doubt, because he's over the dune and he's too far away. And the sound is different when she hears something in the head than when she hears it in the real world. She goes over the dune, hears him for real, the sound changes. So she's clearly hearing that in the head. Like when Luke was flying, you know, to shoot the Death Star, and he could hear Ben.
Run, Luke, run.
Different.
Yeah.
So you've got that. You then have the two guys that are fighting her, and she's, you know, a double R, you know, person. But one of the guys, she kicks to the floor. Now, she doesn't just kick him, she kicks him and he goes flying. So there's a lot more than just fighting involved in that point. There's the bit where then she runs after Finn. Now, she's running after Finn, she's behind him, and then Finn's running through all the tents and things like that. She knew exactly where he was going to go because he ran into a tent and she was waiting there to whack him in the head.
Yeah.
That is perception that isn't normal.
But is that intentional in the film, or is it just us reading into it?
I think it's a fanboy thing. That I think people who are going, oh, well, she got the Force too quickly. If you go back and watch it again, you can see she then, you know, obviously there's the explosion. She pulls Finn up because she's fine and Finn's, you know, knocked out cold. She then flies the Falcon without ever having flown it.
I need to jump in here.
Go on then.
That everything you said right up to the Falcon is absolutely spot on, and her flying the Falcon, I think that sequence of events, I think that's the awakening.
Exactly, because then you got the Snoke, Kylo Ren conversation saying there's been an awakening.
Yeah.
She suddenly has come on point, and when she's flying through the Star Destroyer with the TIE fighter behind her, she's flying along really fast, and suddenly she swings out right.
Yeah.
She cannot have seen it coming.
No. She's using the Force. But
yeah.
Do you know what? Just to add to your thought there, Jeremy, I more than her just using the Force, I think she's using the dark side.
Well, I think she's got a bit of that in her at the end as well.
I can't remember. You might be able to remind me because you've obviously seen it twice as many times as me. Does Snoke use exactly the same line as in the feature as he does in the trailer, where he says there's been an awakening, the dark side and the light?
I don't remember him saying the dark side and the light.
Well, that was the line in the trailer, right?
Yeah.
And in the novelization that Rob mentioned earlier on in his email,
yeah,
there is a whole conversation between Snoke and Kylo Ren, where Snoke says to Kylo Ren, you're important because you're made up of both the light side and the dark side.
Yeah.
He envies that and values that quality.
Yeah.
And that's why he tells Kylo Ren that he wants to train him, because he said that an artist can only work with the materials he's given. And he's implying that in Kylo Ren he's got exceptional materials.
Yeah.
So I think it's the use of the dark side that Snoke has picked up on. And I think Rey's using the dark side because she's both frightened and angry.
Yeah, she's angry quite often, isn't she?
And because they're being pursued, she's terrified. And she's flying that ship at a rate of knots through those tight spaces.
Yeah.
She's frightened. And I think she's dipped in and used the dark side. And he's picked up on that. It's probably like a bolt from the blue, thinking, geez, where has that come from?
It would have been nice if they'd actually not made it, like, silly obvious, but referenced it a bit to make it look intense.
Watch it again. You can see it.
It's there, in plain sight.
It's not hidden.
Yeah,
that's why it rewards repeat viewings.
So does that count in another way? It's a little bit of a tangent, but like one thing that really chapped my backside was the fact that, you know, 1 minute Kylo Ren is stopping blaster bolts in midair and holding.
I'll get back to that as well.
Yeah.
Well, then he can't beat him.
You need to watch it again because you've forgotten some important things there.
What, like he got shot?
He got shot by the super gun from Chewie.
That's one thing, yeah. The other thing as well is, I think I'm probably going to cut across one of your points here, actually, Jeremy, but do you not think that perhaps when Kylo is interrogating her using the Force, he's unlocking something?
Exactly. You can hit again if you listen carefully while you're there. You know the sound that he's got when he's got his hand outstretched and he's interrogating Poe Dameron and then he's doing it to her, it changes. And she unlocks it. And she suddenly twigs. She's like, ah. And that's where she really gets into it.
Have you got any theories what he's unlocking, Jeremy?
I think I'm not sure if he's unlocked memories, because I think that her Force visions show all of this. If you watch it, when she walks to touch the lightsaber, the door is locked. She walks up to the door and it unlocks. Yeah. That could be the Force. She may be thinking to herself, I want to go through that door, and it opens because she's done that with the Force. None of the other doors open in the corridor she walks down, just that one she wants to go through. That could be the Force.
Yeah, and the vision is the Force as well.
The vision is without a doubt a Force, and this is why in repeat viewing, I'm erring more towards your theory of it being of her being Luke's daughter.
Yeah, and I'm totally sold on that now.
Yeah.
Completely sold on that, and I think there's an argument to be made that perhaps Luke used both sides of the Force as well.
Luke tried to strike the Emperor down, didn't he?
Yeah, he used if you watch aggression
it,
a lot.
He used the aggression, and he was only stopped by Vader's... You know, Vader saved the Emperor.
Yeah.
Because Luke was using his anger for him.
Well, can we just talk about Rey's vision for a second? Because when I've gone back repeatedly and looked at that scene and looked at... I've made notes and looked at and listened to what's been said in there as well, because you've got the two Obi-Wan voices, haven't you?
Yeah.
Yoda, there's Darth Vader, Luke screaming no. There's a lot of stuff in there that Rey wouldn't have experienced, so they're not memories.
Definitely in the DNA, isn't it?
One of the lines Obi-Wan has is, these are your first steps, so clearly something's happened. Now, in that Force vision, when we see the bodies at Luke's school, and we see the Knights of Ren, and in her vision, the Knights of Ren are very much focused on her, aren't they?
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
Now, I think you mentioned to me, Jeremy, didn't you, that one of them looks like he's about to strike her down.
Yeah.
It's an axe or something he's got, and it's
like
a big heavy weapon. And he very quickly gets run through with a red lightsaber, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
So I suspect what I've managed to piece together from this, my theory, is that Kylo Ren has decided, maybe it's Snoke's bidding, to wipe out the entire Jedi school. I imagine that's in Luke's absence, because Luke survived to be able to go into hiding.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So he's killed everybody, and then one of the Knights of Ren is about to kill Rey, and that's what we see in her vision. She sees that someone's about to kill her. Kylo stops it for whatever reason, whether it's he can't let a relative be murdered, or he's decided that she might make a good apprentice at some point if he decides he wants to overthrow Snoke, or maybe it's at Snoke's command that she's to be left alive. And then I think he takes her to Jakku and leaves her, and uses a Jedi mind trick to suppress her abilities and to suppress her memory.
But equally, when BB-8 gets away in the Falcon and he's lost his rag and chopped that room up, as soon as the guy coming to him mentions the girl, he gets force grabbed across the room by the throat and he says, "What girl?" He knows that there's a girl on Jakku that he put there.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, I'm completely convinced of that. And in dialogue that's not in the theatrical cut of the film that is in the novelisation is him asking her, I don't know what scene it's in, but he's interrogating her and he says, "Is it you? And is it true you're just a scavenger?" And then later on when they duel, there's a line that's cut where he says, "It is you." So he knows her. They've got a history. She just doesn't remember it.
Do you think a bit of a tangent, but you guys have just made me think of something. A lot of the people I know, and I'm probably going to be slagging myself off here and my own intellect and fanboy status, but a lot of the people I know were disappointed. Now, for whatever reason that is, and obviously they don't form part of the majority because most people love it. But do you think, unless you have the fanboy in-depth, taking it apart and all that, when you first watch it, you don't pick up on all these things you're talking about because
I've been to see it three times with Claire now. Claire is by no means a fanboy. She's not a nerd. She doesn't dissect films. She goes to film to enjoy it. And just watching the film, and again, with Richard and Beck, you know, Richard being more like us and our dissector of films, and Beck being somebody who sits there and watches the film, goes, oh, that was good. It's a film that appeals to just anyone who wants to go and see a film, and people who like me have seen it four times, and every time I've seen it, I've dissected it a little bit more. I'm going to get it down to like nano Star Wars by the time I finish dissecting it. And other people just sit there and enjoy it. And Claire doesn't take it apart because it isn't the kind, you don't need to do that. It's just we enjoy it.
All the incidental bits, though, aren't obvious. All the bits, and they're really good points and make a great film. But I think it's close to obvious.
Well, I think that in retrospect, when you finish watching the trilogy, you can watch it again and go, oh, yeah, of course. You know, I think I had no idea that Rey was going to be the one who had the Force. I had no idea at all. And I still feel it. Every time I see her force the lightsaber into her hand, I kind of go, I love that bit.
I love it so much. You can see, I don't know how much of this, like Steve's planted a seed of doubt now in my mind. I don't know how much of this I'm bringing to it, but I'm convinced that there's plenty of dark side in Rey when she's fighting Kylo Ren. I think that's why he's struggling.
You could see the look. She was angry. But I also think that I've got my Kylo Ren theory that's ready whenever anyone else is to come out of my Kylo Ren theory.
Yeah, do it. Drop it now.
I think that Kylo Ren is Star Wars version of Snape.
Okay.
I think that the battle that he had with his conscience, with Han, saying he knows what he had to do, but he doesn't know if he's got the strength to do it, he couldn't get close to Snoke if he didn't kill Han. Because Snoke would never trust him. So by sacrificing Han, same as Snape did with Dumbledore, if you're a Harry Potter nerd and you know you all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Han had to die, not just to upset Steve and to please Harrison Ford, but I think that is an arc to the story that's why he had tears welling up. And for all you know, all we know, you know, we'll find out respectively, he was, you know, telepathically explaining it to Han. We don't know.
Yeah,
because he was crying. He clearly didn't want to kill his dad, and I think that it could be a big MacGuffin at the end of it. And it could be a big twist, and at the end of it, he's going to be the one to bring balance to the Force. Well, it's funny, Steve might like him.
It's funny you should say that because when I started having this feeling, I put a Star Wars Insights up on the site today about the dark side and the light and the theory that Rey's using the dark side. I kind of suggest in that article that perhaps Rey is going to be the problem in this story. And right now she's this great and noble character. But what if, I mean, she's come into Jedihood, if you like, as late in the game as Luke, and she's going to face the same perils as he did with the, you know, possibly being seduced by the dark side, the same perils that Anakin faced. What if she does go full dark side, and by episode 9, what if she's the dark side user and she's the problem and Kylo comes back?
Yeah, that's every possibility.
That and your Snape theory, Jeremy, they lock together pretty well, don't they?
I think that she, you know, just watching it as many times as I have and seeing all the subtle use of the Force, which I haven't bothered going into all of them, I think that she is stronger than Luke by a mile.
I'd agree.
because Luke struggled in the beginning of Empire to get the lightsaber to him when he was on Hoth, and she did it instantly. And you can see all these different ways she's been using it. She is more powerful than Obi. All right, she's up Anakin Yoda level. She is going to be awesome.
Steve, did you have a problem with how quickly Rey went from being Muggle to Jedi? Yeah,
it's the same thing for me. I wouldn't have had a problem if they put a slight explanation in the film so that it made it believable. But if you don't explain things in film sometimes, people who aren't super fans find it disbelievable.
I would disagree. I've watched it with, you know, Muggles. And they I've not had one of them go, oh no, she had the Force too quick. None of them have done it.
Yeah, Lisa didn't have a problem with it either.
I'm talking about mid-range fanboys. We know how, like you say, we know how long it took Luke to get the Force. They talk about how Anakin was too old now. And then all of a sudden, this girl, with no experience of it other than personal, is moving lightsabers around, beating a, like Kylo Ren, who stops a blaster bolt in midair for 5 minutes and then talks to everyone while he's holding it there. Like, he's super powerful, and she beats him with no training at all.
But he's lost half of his blood.
Yeah, but I know, even so, like, a Jedi of his caliber would not be easily overdone by someone.
But again, if you read about the other Jedi that are on the Jedi Council and all these kind of nerd things, if you want to go into that, there are different kinds of Jedi, and there are Jedi that are fantastic with a lightsaber, but their mental control over people isn't as strong. He may be less of a physical Jedi master than he is, you know, with his control of things.
Mm. It's like Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan, wasn't it? Qui-Gon's knowledge of the living force and Obi-Wan's ignorance of it, even though he was his Padawan, you know, should learn from his master. But he didn't pick up on any of that stuff.
It would have been nice. I agree with you. All these things are feasible. But there was no explanation of it in the film.
No, but do you know what I think this is, Steve? I think this is the same... Right, this is the position I'm coming out from. Think of the final moments, the final few frames of Empire Strikes Back. There was a lot of stuff that Irving Kershner, Lawrence Kasdan and George Lucas threw up in the air and then said, see you in 3 years. And I think that's what we're seeing here.
Absolutely.
We've been asked to consider these things now. Why did Rey progress so rapidly? And I think from a real world perspective, narratively, we didn't need to spend the time being educated in what the Force is. But back in the 70s when Star Wars first came out, they needed to take us very slowly through it and teach us as viewers what the Force is. And then in Empire Strikes Back, they reveal a little bit more. And then by Jedi, then you get the full power up version of Luke. We don't need to be educated like that anymore. The Force is, everyone knows what it is, whether they're a Star Wars fan or not. Everyone knows what a Jedi is. So they, in a real world, and from a narrative perspective, the storytellers didn't have to worry about taking Rey from 0 to 60 inside one movie because we all understood what was happening. Mm. But for the deep-seated fans, we are now being asked to consider how she got there so quickly. And my answer to that question is, we're seeing somebody use the dark side of the Force more freely because she's untrained and she's got no one there to guide her.
Yeah, that's why definitely. She's so powerful. I definitely agree with that.
That's why Kylo Ren really struggled with her. And if you look on that look, there's a look on Adam Driver's face when Kylo Ren's on the ground, and she's sliced him across the face. He's got that great big bloody mark across his face. And I mean bloody as in literally, not as in profanity. She's using a dark side there, and she is riled up. And if that ground hadn't opened up between the two,
she would have chopped him into pieces.
I think she'd have lost herself to that.
Yeah.
Couldn't she have done a force jump across that crack?
Possibly, but it gave her the time she needed to.
Yeah, she put herself at the naughty step for a minute, I think.
Yeah, she knocked that lightsaber off and then went after Finn, so straight away, compassion took over, and she was back to the light side again. But I think she, in that final third of the movie, she's fluctuating backwards and forwards continually.
Mm. Mm, definitely.
I think we should have another wrap-up again once I've seen it again.
Well, we definitely will. I think this is going to be, there's going to be plenty of room for Force Awakens conversation until episode 9's out, and the trilogy's wrapped up. Because every time we get something new, if it's a fresh perspective because, Steve, you get a second viewing, or if it's because we've got the Blu-ray and we can sit down and watch it and stop it and discuss it, we're always going to be... there's going to be a school of The Force Awakens now, isn't there, as we all get used to it and get more familiar with it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes.
That's some fascinating points. You brought up some really great points there, Jeremy.
Yeah, it did. Made me think about it again. I do need to see it, and I need to be less closed-minded in the sense that I was expecting a simply brilliant movie in its own right rather than a thinky film.
I think you fell into a bit of a trap, which is a good thing Claire brought up. Is that everybody dissed the prequels and said, oh, they should be more like the original one. So they bring out one that's really close to the original one, and all the fanboys are like, oh, it's just like the original one. That's rubbish.
I did say I missed Jar Jar earlier.
You didn't mean that, though, so we'll let you off. I think what I've been calling this, and I'm working on an article for the site at the moment, I've been calling this movie a freeboot.
Yeah.
I think it works the same way as Jurassic World and Spectre this year, where it's an opportunity for the studio to say, look, you're all familiar with this, we're going to tell you a new story, but we're going to tell it to the same rhythms and the same beats as the stories that you know, so that if you've, like, Lisa wasn't a fan of the prequel, she watched one and maybe a bit of the second one and then decided, that's not for me. But she was a big fan of the original, so showing her this film, she said, that's Star Wars. And that, I think that's the goal of this movie.
The thing.
It's them setting out their stall and saying, look, don't worry about anything. These are the stories we're telling. And it's breakneck pace, it's full of action, it's got compelling, interesting characters, it's full of charm and wit. And, you know, they've just played a familiar tune for us with this film. Even though there's plenty of original material in there, they played a familiar tune, so it appeals to everybody. Steve, I think you and Paul, you've fallen down a crack where you were ready for something new. You were ready to be challenged by something fresh and new.
That's the next one, though.
And you didn't get it, but that is definitely the next one.
I was expecting to... I wanted a film where it felt like Star Wars again, but it moved on from...
But that's what the next one is. This is the reintroduction.
I didn't want a Death Star again. Why do we have to have a Death Star again? Why do you
Because you're bringing another generation of people into this universe. My children
not realise that Death Stars don't work? They've all got an obvious...
They do work. How can you say they don't work? They blew up the whole planet in Alderaan. They took out an entire system.
They always put a little button that says blow up here. And it's
exactly,
crap.
But Han pointed that out in the film. He always said there's always a way to blow up. Almost like a little sly dig and a laugh about it. Watch it again.
And in episode 9, if they bring another Death Star in, like Return of the Jedi, I'm gonna...
Well, that was...
I tell you what, if Poe Dameron gets stuck in carbonite, then I'll be upset.
Yeah, this whole thing with the storytelling rhythms and the ring theory, I think we've got something that's similar to A New Hope, but I think they're going to spring off and go in totally different directions with the second and third parts of this trilogy.
Definitely.
And think about the story of the first trilogy was, it became very much about the Emperor and Vader squabbling over Luke. And the Death Star in the third film was literally a trap to get Luke's... to wipe out Luke's allies, wipe out all of his friends, so that Palpatine could seize him for himself. And, and he knew that was going to cost him Vader, but that's what he wanted. I don't think that story is going to be told this time, so I don't think another Death Star or a version of it in the third movie will work, because that's not the cheese on the trap this time.
No, but we are looking at the First Order striking back. It's got to go yin-yang, isn't it? You can't have another win for the rebellion in the next film. It's got to be a version of Empire, and something dark happens either in a different way or in the same vein, because otherwise it won't.
Well, the way this one's ended is you've got a decentralized government.
This isn't all fluffy, is it?
No.
Well, that's done it already, hasn't it?
You've got the government that's been wiped out, so you've got a decentralized government, and then on a personal level, you've got two apprentices going off to be trained by masters in their respective arts.
And you've lost Han, and you've got a very injured Finn as well. It's not...
more lightsaber.
Wizard of Oz, is it?
Well, more lightsaber battles. There was hardly any, and they were very crappy, weren't they?
No, I like the last one. Yeah.
They weren't very good. There was a couple, there was a quick one with Finn and 99, whatever his name was, the flake guy.
Yeah.
There was him, and there was a like very rough scuffle with Kylo and what's her face, Rey.
I love that though.
But you need to watch it again.
Didn't you want a Duel of the Fates? I could have really done with a Duel of the Fates, which is the best bit of episode one.
We need to get you up to see this film again.
Yeah, we do.
As soon as possible.
I mean, the reason of the prequels I like episode one the most is just Darth Maul and that scene.
Mm.
It's the best lightsaber battle of any of them. And, you know, Darth Maul is a fantastic Sith Lord. But if you watch, you know, Kylo Ren, he's really good because he's been shot by the mega gun. You can see the blood pouring out of him. He visibly, as you watch it, gets more and more ill as it goes on, which is probably why he's not used so much force. But the energy that Rey has out of it, because Finn just gets beaten up. I mean, Finn gets one lucky shot and then that's it. Finn is clearly not the guy using the force. But when that lightsaber lands in Rey's hand and she's got full on, I agree with Mark, dark side anger going on there because her friends have been chopped up and he killed Solo. That scene is brilliant. And
yeah.
she, if you watch it, she does a lot of the fight running away. It's not like she's standing toe-to-toe with him. There's a lot of running away.
There's a lot of fear and a lot of aggression in play.
Up until he mentions the Force, and she kind of goes, ah.
Yeah,
and
she marshals that, doesn't she?
At that point,
when we see it again, we'll have to come back on, because I'll probably have, hopefully, a new insight.
All right. Well, before we wrap up on the Force Awakens talk, I just want to mention an actor named Junus Suotamo, who is a 6'11" basketball player.
Oof.
Who is the new Chewbacca, because he did a lot of the scenes that Mayhew couldn't quite pull off because of Peter Mayhew's unfortunate situation with his knees. So a lot of the scenes where Chewie was climbing ladders, running around, carrying Finn off the Falcon, that was all this new young guy named Junus. I think we mentioned the Han Solo movie earlier on. I think he's going to play a big part in that. So I'm really excited to see what he's going to bring to new Star Wars movies.
Mm. Yeah, that
you can't tell which is which either.
No.
I think he's got the mannerisms down pat. He's brilliant at it.
Peter Mayhew's been a consultant on his performance as well, so that's key.
Peter Mayhew might carry on doing the voice.
Yeah, he's just going to do the chewy ADR.
Do the sitting down stuff, wouldn't he?
Yeah.
I'm going to apply.
All right, let's talk briefly about some of this Rogue One stuff that's come out. The tidal wave.
To dash, Mark. Would that be annoying?
You've got to go, have you, mate? No problem.
Getting moaned at by the others.
Okay, no problem. All right.
Is that all right?
Yeah, Jeremy and I will wrap up on this.
You're more than capable. I know I have some valuable Star Wars insights. But
you hate it. You hate joining Star Wars. Go away.
No, I'm new to more of a match than anyone.
You like three of the seven films. You're not even a fan.
No, exactly.
All right, mate.
But thanks, guys. Listen, thanks to Rob again. That was brilliant. But I'll be on the next one. Hopefully I'll have seen it again. I'll leave you with the main guys. And nice. I'll shoot off.
All right, Steve, we'll speak to you later, mate.
Cheers, guys.
Cheers, buddy. Take care. Bye.
Bye.
Right, Jeremy, did you get any of this Rogue One news this week?
I've read it on the talkstarwars.co.uk thing. I've been trying to catch up with that as we've gone along.
Well, there's some very exciting stuff that's been coming out. I mean, first of all, the movie itself is the most anticipated film of 2016, according to Fandango.
Which goes without saying.
Yeah. Is that not a double-edged sword, though? Could there not be a problem with people thinking that they're going to get a sequel to The Force Awakens?
Yeah, I think that a lot of people don't realise what Rogue One is and what it's about. I think they're going to see Finn and Rey running around with lightsabers, and I think they need to make it clear before that time.
Yeah, they've got to be very careful with the brand management here, and I wonder if they're dragging their heels a little bit too much.
We should have had trailers by now, I think.
There's material out there from last year's Celebration, which is just a very short teaser with Alec Guinness dialogue laid over the top of some new footage. But that hasn't been made public yet. I know that there was an embargo on Rogue One last year because of Rogue Nation. So there was an understanding that they wouldn't do any Rogue One promotion in 2015. Well, I would have thought they'd come out the gate New Year's.
I was expecting it just a tiny clip because your original Star Wars trailer was like, you know, basically Finn standing up on a desert planet, and that was it, really, wasn't it?
Yeah.
But I would have thought that the last trailer before Star Wars come up would have been a 5-second Rogue One trailer just to get everyone really excited.
Yeah, I can tell you something. I put this out. I buried it in an article this week because I can't confirm this. It's come from somebody close to Rogue One that I'm connected to, and they said that there was footage played for the cast and crew in December at Pinewood Studios.
Right.
And Adam Driver was there, apparently.
Oh, really? Ah, right, yeah. I did read that. Yeah.
They were over for the Force Awakens premiere.
Yeah.
And I thought initially, and I said to this guy, don't expect Adam Driver to be a part of Rogue One, because Rogue One is set decades before Kylo Ren was even born.
Yeah.
It was probably just an invite to a Star Wars family member, you know, come and see this footage that we got. But he swears blind that Adam Driver was in a Darth Vader costume.
I would have said Darth Vader has got to be in it, surely.
Darth Vader, I'm sure, is in it because of the sculptor Brian Muir's connection to the project. And he is the guy that did the suit, the Darth Vader suit.
Yeah.
And I've heard also that there's the control plate from his chest plate has been in the creature shop at Pinewood.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So it sounds to me like Vader's going to be involved. And I wonder now whether or not Adam Driver's involvement might have been a fun cameo to put him in as Vader. You know, like
with
Daniel Craig as a stormtrooper.
Which was brilliant.
If there's any truth to this, that someone has seen Adam Driver in the Darth Vader costume without the helmet and without the gloves. It was a candid piece of footage. If that's true, could he be playing Vader in a cameo? That might be interesting.
I would like that, actually, because I thought he was brilliant.
I thought it was fantastic. He's one of the breakout stars of The Force Awakens for me.
Well, the three new main characters were all fantastic, so, you know.
The other thing I wondered about this footage that was shown is, what is that an assembly of a trailer that the cast and crew got to look at in December? And will we see it shortly?
Oh, I think we've got to. I mean, they're not going to wait to the Super Bowl or anything, are they?
No, there was a rumour this week that it won't come out until Captain America Civil War. That's in May.
I think that's way too late. Yeah.
If they're going to do anything to
stick
brand
it in with Deadpool
this,
or something.
Yeah, the other thing they could do as well is they could wait until the end of the month when The Force Awakens is starting to die off and then release the Rogue One trailer and exclusively put it on The Force Awakens print so you get those return visits.
People are asked.
But I checked with the BBFC yesterday and asked them if they'd certified Rogue One, and they hadn't. Well, I'd asked, would they certify Rogue One and then not make it public knowledge? And they said, no, as soon as we certify a film, we would announce it. They haven't announced Rogue One yet because I've been keeping an eye on it. So it hasn't been submitted to the BBFC at this point for certification.
Okay.
But there's no saying that they might certify that Monday. And
What about on the Blu-ray? Do you think they might put something on there?
Possibly. I think maybe there'll be some behind-the-scenes stuff. They tend to do that sort of thing, don't they? Mm-hmm. Could be quite interesting.
Yeah, it's a good year for films this year, I think.
Yeah, it's a great year. It's a really strong year for genre films.
Yeah, oh yeah. Yeah, definitely. Your superhero movie. It's the
Batman, Civil War, Doctor Strange in November.
Well, the trailers have changed to every viewing that I've watched the film, and this had the best Batman Superman trailer on it, and that actually made me go, actually, I quite fancy that now. I wasn't sure.
Oh, I need to see that trailer then, because that might change my mind.
Well, yeah, it's Wonder Woman's in it and all sorts.
Yeah, we'll see. I don't know.
I'm not a big DC, Superman 2, omnipotent. It's really hard to kill Superman, and Batman vs. Superman would be pointless. Yeah. But there's a lot more to this one, and it's a bit funnier. You know, it's all been very dark and a bit Batman for me. But the new trailer was quite funny, so it's worth watching that. And the 3D on it was fantastic on the trailer, brilliant.
Well, hopefully we'll get something like that. When the three of us go up to watch The Force Awakens in IMAX, we'll hopefully get something like that to see, because the 3D in IMAX is breathtaking.
I'd love to see that, yeah, we'd definitely have to watch that.
Okay, couple of last bits for Rogue One, then we've got a rumour this week about the plot. It looks like Mads Mikkelsen may be playing a guy who's taken over the construction of the Death Star from the Geonosians. Did you see that?
I read that, yeah.
And Felicity Jones may be his daughter.
Yeah.
And he advises her.
He has a turn of conscience, doesn't he?
Yeah. He's. I heard him sort of equated to an Oppenheimer-type character who suddenly realised what he's created.
Yeah.
Would you buy it that Felicity Jones was Mads Mikkelsen's daughter?
I don't know. What's the age difference?
I don't know. Not much, I don't think.
Well, if we can buy Sean Connery being Indiana Jones' dad...
True. That's a good point.
You know, we've got to put these things to one side, haven't we? There could be some very good makeup.
Yeah, and I've already done some creative mathematics with Felicity Jones' age, because I'm trying to make her into Mon Mothma. I'm desperate for that character.
I saw that, Mothma. She's brilliant. She should be back.
Yeah, I think it would be a really good thing. But there was a character named Leek this week. It's been debunked. It's not Felicity Jones' character. But a female character named of Lyra Erso was released through the casting of a body double. Everyone initially speculated that would be Felicity Jones' body double, but it's not. They've announced who her body double is.
Yeah.
And it isn't this lady. It's the lady who doubled for Rey on set Force Awakens that's doing Felicity Jones. So no connection there, unfortunately, but it's interesting to get a little name.
The Ray thing's just from my daughter loves Ray.
Oh, good.
She's 8. She absolutely loved Ray.
That's the target audience, isn't it?
Absolutely. And she, for Christmas, she got an Angry Birds Princess Leia cuddly toy thing. And she said, can I just call this Ray in nice clothes?
Oh, bless.
She said, poor Ray doesn't get to wear any nice clothes. And I really like Ray, so can this be Ray? I'm like, you call her what you want.
I hope she doesn't expect Ray to be in pretty dresses in the next movie, because I don't see that happening. I don't think we're going to get that version of Ray. I think she's going to be a utility girl.
And possibly end up psychotic and murderous. So.
Yeah, who knows? Watch this space.
But I think that's the point that Steve is missing, that the next one is the one he's looking forward to. I think it's a bit of a recap.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, you and I, and everybody else I've spoken to, with the exception
I've met
of
nobody who didn't love it.
Oh, I haven't. Other than Steve and Paul, I don't know anyone that's taken exception to it. It seems to have landed with everybody. And I think it's a bit of a cop-out to have to say to Steve, look, the next film is the one you're waiting for. But I think that's the truth. And
well, I think the thing that Claire pointed out is, mathematically, Steve doesn't like Star Wars.
Yeah, that's what I said as well. And
he likes 3 of 7 movies.
Yeah.
I think if James Cameron had done Star Wars, he'd be all over it.
Yeah.
If James Cameron had made the prequels, he'd love them.
Do you know what? I think this would probably be a good way to close out the podcast. I don't think James Cameron could direct a Star Wars film.
No.
Because, to my mind, directing a Star Wars film means getting out of the way of the film.
Let
the story tell itself. Yeah. And I don't see a lot of JJ on this movie. I see a lot of fantastic movie making, but I don't see the lens flares. I don't see...
There's a couple. I noticed a couple, which are... But they're so subtle, you just kind of go, yeah, I'll give him that.
But it's not the... You can see on... There are artifacts on the Star Trek movies where there's a skew on the lens, and it's really hyper-stylized.
Yeah.
And I didn't get that in Star Wars. It seemed like he'd shelved all of those personal eccentricities and made a Star Wars movie, exactly.
Yeah.
And I think that's what Kathleen Kennedy has very deliberately done with the recruitment of Gareth Edwards, Colin Trevorrow, Rian Johnson. she's hired filmmakers that will bring a craft to the film, but yeah. won't necessarily bring with them a huge personal style that they have to get on screen.
They've kept the original. They've made a Star Wars film. They haven't made a JJ film, and they haven't made a James Cameron film.
Which is a shame.
They all leave a signature on everything, but I think they have just made the perfect new Star Wars film.
Because I would like to see what somebody like Cameron or Chris Nolan, what they could bring to, if they didn't bring a visual style and they didn't bring a pacing of their own to their version of Star Wars, I'd be interested to see what they could do with the characters and what performance they could elicit from the actors, but they would need to shelve everything else at the same time.
Quentin Tarantino couldn't make one because they'd all be talking for three quarters of the film and then they'd shoot everyone at the end.
Yeah, and it would be too much swearing, even though Sam Jackson would obviously have to come back as Mace Windu.
Yeah.
But yeah, there are just some filmmakers that aren't cut out for Star Wars filmmaking because
they have joy in their life.
They want to put too much on it. They hate joy in the same way as Steve hates joy, which is why he's not here to bid a fond farewell to our listeners. I need to just thank our listeners as well, actually, because I know we haven't got a fantastically huge audience because we're just getting started. We're 10 episodes in, but it must be said we're in the new and noteworthy section on iTunes, and that's purely because of the support we've been given from people listening to the show. So thank you for listening. Thank you for subscribing. If you could do us a big favour right now as you're listening to this podcast, whatever device you're listening to it on, if you're listening to it on your mobile device, your phone or your tablet, or if you're sneakily listening to it while you should be working, you naughty Star Wars fan, please just share it. Click that share button, send a tweet right now, and if you tag @TalkStarWars in the tweet that you send as you share this episode of the podcast, we'll follow you back, and then we'll have a direct line to each other. You can fire us questions the way Rob and Master Snow did earlier on, and we'll address them on the next episode. But thank you very much for the support. Getting up there and doing noteworthy in iTunes has been really important to us.
Yeah.
Right.
And the interaction is great as well. It's
a lot of fun, isn't it? You get these different perspectives, get these different questions. It stimulates the conversation. And even though it makes people like Steve run for the hills, clearly what he's done this evening, it does open up a good thing. I mean, you and I talking tonight, it's already, my cogs are turning now, thinking about Kylo Ren and the fact that he might actually come back. We might
I think he's a bit of a Snape there.
We could get a bait and switch between him and Rey in this series of films.
Yep.
See where that goes.
We've got years of discussion about that. It's great.
Yeah, plenty of episodes yet to come. All right. Thanks, everyone. We will see you next time. Thanks, Jeremy, for jumping on. Steve sends his love to everybody, even though he's bolted. And we will see you next time.
Bye bye.